the Around the NFL podcast. Doesn't want to watch the Bengals in January.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. I am still not Dan Hansis. I'm Colleen Wolf, and I am joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, bros?
Hey, Colleen.
Bros?
How's everybody doing?
Just a bunch of bros watching football. Great weekend.
I feel like my eyes are going to be fused to the television soon based on between Making a Murderer and all of the games this weekend. I really have not walked around at all.
Slightly unhealthy.
It has been a very unhealthy weekend.
I want to throw a little spoiler out there before you just start talking Making a Murder.
I know. I won't because it's really good.
Spoiler, they made the murder.
They did. All right. So we have a great show for you guys today. Dan Hansis is still look, there's the awkward ISO cam too back. Awesome.
Can't escape that.
That is great. Happy that's back. We are missing Dan Hansis. He is still on his island vacation getaway, and we can't wait for him to come back.
Wow.
Dan, please come back. We need you here. Please. So while we wait for him, let's check in first behind the glass here with Brandon. Brandon, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us.
Yeah, I feel like we've reached a new level. We've been slacking. We've been texting.
Yeah,
been really
great communication.
Upping our communication.
Brandon, who's easier to work with, Colleen or Dan?
Here's the real question: is Dan going to listen back to the podcast? So can I say Colleen?
You can say whatever you want. You're going to pay the price.
I feel like if Dan listens, then I'll kind of
listeners are now going to tell on you for that statement.
Right.
So it doesn't matter.
It's true.
We have had. A lot of great games this weekend. So many games
to get to.
Yes.
What do we think? Before we dive into like each game by game, which we'll go through, how would you rate this as a wild card weekend in general?
What, on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm going to C+.
I feel like the Bengals-Steelers game might have saved the entire weekend.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. But even that game was kind of a dud for three quarters, although that last quarter made up for it. Overall, though, I feel like I needed a little more.
That made
the football wasn't so great.
Yeah, but that game alone is a game that I'll remember for like 25, 30 years. I could be dead at that point.
As will Bengals fans.
Yeah, so it's like that alone rises the whole weekend above. The rest of it was kind of junk. I kind of like the Seattle-Minnesota game. That had its moments.
I think yesterday was way better than today, just because of Westavis, really.
Oh, it was phenomenal. And I'm still downright giddy.
Yes. So we have so much coming up on today's show. We're going to go through all the wild card games. And, of course, the Packers offense, they look like they're back. We have the Seattle Vikings, and that was a thriller at the end, and every single fan in the stands there frozen. Mm. And, of course, the Bengals, they lose another game. So let's get right to it with the first game on our list, and we have the Washington Redskins and the Green Bay Packers. The Packers came into Washington with many questions about their offense, a lot of doubts about that defense, and they emerged as winners. 35-18, the Packers offense. They finally came together. Greg, they looked confident. They scored 4 touchdowns. Are they back?
I think they're back, at least being respectable. They had a good opponent to face this weekend. The Redskins defense, I think, was the worst defense of the 8 that we saw play this weekend. They were below average all year. In the secondary, they were a bit of a mess. And once they couldn't get pressure on Rodgers after the first quarter, they put an extra offensive lineman to help out, give him a little extra time, and he started looking like Aaron Rodgers again. I'm not going to say they're back, but if you can score 32 points in 5 drives and you get through a road playoff game and you have a good defense, you are always going to have a fighting chance when you have Aaron Rodgers. I think that we saw that against Washington, and now they've got to step up in class against Arizona.
I understand why you said they're back and then 2 minutes later backtracked and said, I don't think they're back.
I didn't say I don't think they're back.
I understand, because this offense is quarter to quarter. At the end of the first quarter, Aaron Rodgers was throwing without his feet, throwing with poor fundamentals. They looked like the same offense for the last 3 months, where they couldn't get anything moving. And then for the final three quarters, he looked like September again.
11 yards in the first 4 drives. And then they scored, as I said, 32 points, I think, in their next 5 drives. So it's not so much just about what happened today. I think it's about maybe they can feel good about themselves. And the defense has been consistent. For the most part, the defense has played well at the end of the year, and I think you saw that again today.
I mean, this reminds me of that Cowboys game where Mike McCarthy finally has I think the reason he took over the play calling was he wants the ground game to come to life. They want to be that kind of tough, you know, ground first team. And today, they're just running through holes and off the edge where there's not a Redskins player within 15 yards of anyone. And it was embarrassing on that front.
That will be different in Arizona.
It will be.
We were waiting for sort of this switch to flip, and we kind of joked about it the last couple weeks, I think, sort of waiting and waiting. And then we sort of found it against this okay Redskins defense. The run defense looked really soft today, especially in the second half. You saw James Starks and Eddie Lacy just with these chunk plays.
If you're watching on YouTube, look at Eddie Lacy rumbling.
Lower your shoulder and run him over, Lacy.
That play specifically, we were all watching in the newsroom over at NFL Now, and it was like I thought it was in slow motion watching
him
run.
It was in slow motion. Well, he was. The rest of the play.
I mean, it's Lacy and it's Starks, but it's also, if you are watching on YouTube, the lack of tackling. There's no gang tackling. There's no one around these running backs. And look at that. He's just running down the sideline with no one around him. I mean, a lot of teams would have looked good against the way the defense played for Washington today.
Well, but I think you have to give the Packers the credit for that. The Redskins haven't been great all year in general, but they've played a little better on defense lately. And ultimately, they played good in the first quarter, and they were dominated by a team that kind of exerted their will. I mean, it was 142 yards on the ground. Randall Cobb ran the ball five times. It was a little bit of everything. Aaron Rodgers getting rid of the ball quickly. I mean, they dominated up front. I thought J.C. Treader is the left tackle of this game, and they take the early safety, and you're thinking this is going to be a long day. But ultimately, Washington, who has been pretty good up front, I would say, on both sides of the ball lately, got pushed around.
And the Packers also, they were really good in the red zone too, and that was sort of an issue for them. I think they were 4 of 5 in the red zone, and the last three games, I think they were 2 of 11 in the red zone, which is horrific. But also, just to see Adams, he converted all 4 of his targets, and him and Cobb just together, it was nice to see them sort of make some plays and maybe get that confidence that they needed.
Had to have been Adams' best game of the season. The offseason MVP finally showed up, and then hurts his knee during the second half and never came back.
I think for me, I mean, what I was expecting, and we talked during the week, and there was a lot of, you know, reverse backtracking on Twitter about this today, was the concept that Kirk Cousins was the better quarterback right now than Aaron Rodgers. Well, we laughed, but we did a segment on NFL Network where half of the group said that was the case going into this game.
Well, we said the better offense. I don't think anyone was saying
better offense, but I mean, so that's not the case after this affair. At the same time, I mean, what happened was the explosive Washington air attack that we've seen for the past month vanished outside of Jordan Reed, who was a monster for part of this game and probably kept it from being a bigger blowout. But DeSean Jackson, 17 yards. Jamison Crowder, 15 yards. They didn't get it going today.
Jackson also had another boneheaded play. Nonchalantly,
oh my God, that was awful,
into the pylon without putting the ball across the pylon, and basically cost the offense 4 points because Green Bay's defense had a really impressive goal line stand there.
Colleen's having flashbacks.
It reminded me of that play his rookie year with the Eagles. And yeah, it wasn't as egregious because he didn't throw it away. But why is he holding the ball back there to begin with? Why is he running like that?
Well, that was a huge play in the game. And I think you can blame DeSean for not putting the ball out and getting in there. But you can also blame the Washington Redskins for not scoring at first and goal at the 6-yard line. And I think this is why this wasn't an easy game to just summarize, oh, he blew it for them, he blew it. It was everyone. It was Alfred Morris getting stuffed on a couple plays up the middle where they couldn't run the ball. They haven't been able to run the ball for most of the game. It was Kirk Cousins taking a pretty unforgivable delay of the game on third and goal at the 2 or 3 yard line. Then they're back at the 8. And it was HaHa Clinton Dix of the Packers defense, who should get some credit for making 2 nice defensive plays there on the goal line. And for the most part, the Packers' good defensive players did step up. Clinton Dix had some big plays.
Clay Matthews
did. Nick Perry. I mean, everyone kind of
turned. Mike Neal hit a big game.
This is a team, I know they're not as good as the Cardinals, but I do think they're a team with enough players that if they get enough of those players that can just make game-changing plays, you know, they can have a really good top game if they had everything fall into line.
Was anyone surprised by the outcome?
Not terribly.
I was surprised in the fact that Washington, you know, at one point they're up, what, 11-0, and they end up scoring 18 points by the end of the game. The way that it started, I thought, you know, there was definitely some chemistry with Cousins and Jordan Reed, and I thought he was going to be this, but Reed would be the story of the game potentially here.
Mike and Hyde did a great job on him.
Yeah, I mean, it fizzled out, and so that surprises me. I guess at one point Green Bay was going to do this, but it was 4 days ago that we were all saying, you know, I don't buy this Green Bay offense anymore. I was saying that. And so for them to go out and put 35 points up, and now we're talking about them competing with the Cardinals, I am surprised. I don't think they're going to hang with Arizona.
I agree with that. But to me, this Redskins team was mediocre all year. This was not a great game for them, but they didn't beat a winning team all year. Kirk Cousins has actually never beat a winning team for what it's worth in his entire career, which seems a little crazy. And
has funny. Matthew Stafford yet?
I think he finally got over the hump this year.
What was the Packers?
And I think this Cousins game was typical. I've heard, you know, I heard a little bit of criticism for Cousins popping up, and I just was thinking this is basically what he's been all year. I don't think it was a particularly good Kirk Cousins game, but I don't think it was a particularly bad one. You're going to have a couple mistakes. He fumbled the ball twice. They lost one. You know, he could have been intercepted one or twice. That'll happen. But he also hit some receivers in stride. To me, he wasn't really the reason they were winning games. I think it was a whole team effort in the coaching. And I definitely don't think he was the reason they lost this game. It was just kind of a middle of the road Kirk Cousins game, and they needed everyone around him to be better.
Yeah, he was sacked 4 times in this game. I mean, there was a lot of pressure in his face. Six times. And he didn't really deal with it very well at all.
I think if there's a criticism for Kirk Cousins, it's that that's it. Not having a good feel of when the pressure is around him.
He takes his sack rate is one of the lowest in the NFL, though.
Gets rid of the ball quickly.
He does. Well, yeah, so this was one of those games where I was almost hoping, and I know that's weird as an Eagles fan, but I sort of wanted the Redskins to beat them just because of all the storylines that went into this game and everything that we were sort of talking about heading into the game about the Packers offense just not doing what we're used to them doing. But of course, just like Seattle came in and they sort of in the Seattle game, and we'll get to that in a minute, but it was sort of reminiscent of that in the fact that both teams looked like they might lose the game in the beginning, and then things turned around for them.
Well, Sessler was rooting against it. He's done with this Packers team. I mean,
that's true.
The negativity, he was just like, I'm sick of James.
Well, no. James hold on. What Greg is couching and hiding away is the fact that he feels the exact same way about the Redskins.
I don't couch that at all. I was happy to.
Well, in that statement, you were flipping it
another
way.
Both of these things are true, Greg. The last thing he wants is the Redskins to succeed in any way.
Yes.
And Mark, you were just exasperated with the Packers
You're
and find them a boring watch.
What I want, they were not boring today. When Eddie Lacy got going, that I can watch. When it's 6-yard pass patterns to James Jones, who will wear the hooded sweatshirt in
who,
an 87 degree game.
Will be shut down by Patrick Peterson next week.
That's the thing. What I want is the best NFC championship we can get. There's a lot of trash teams in these playoffs.
There's
no way around it. And I don't say that about the Packers, but I just want the two best teams, and I don't want that upset on any level. That's all.
Are you saying the Redskins are a trash team?
No, they're not. I think actually the Redskins can come out of this game.
Who are these trash teams you're speaking of?
Well, they're in the AFC. One of them resides in Houston.
If the team that
the Redskins are not a trash team, but they do not deserve to go or to go on two more levels with upset victories. I want to see the Carolina Panthers and the Arizona Cardinals and the rest of you get out of my face.
You like who's the trash team then? If a 9-7 team in the second worst or the worst division in football that didn't beat a winning team all year isn't one of them. They're a mid-level team.
They're mid-level. They've got something to work with going in, and
got upgraded.
No, because you know what? Coming into the season, I think we would have said Jay Gruden has got to be a top 5 candidate to get fired by a dysfunctional Redskins organization. And what they did overall is impressive, but they're not there yet.
His face on the sideline was priceless at some point. He was so upset, and I liked when they asked him in the post game. They were trying to give him the cheese of, aren't you proud of this team? You know, aren't there so many positives to come out of this year? And Gruden had the answer that I'm always thinking. He said, no, this is the playoffs, and you don't know when you're going to get back there, and you're trying to win the championship, and if your season ends, it's a huge disappointment. There's always this feeling when teams lose in the playoffs that had a surprising year. Well, they're building something.
Right.
Now things are stable. Who knows? No one knows anything about the NFL. It could be a tire fire next year, and this is your chance. You're in the playoffs. You had a lead. You're at home. That can be a big moment in a lot of people's career. And they fell flat.
Yeah, if you're a Redskins fan at the end of the first quarter, you had to be flying. You had to be feeling great, really confident that your team was going to advance, and who knows what can happen once you get to the divisional round.
Well, The same thing can be said for the Vikings fans. So let's move on to that game. We have Seattle and Minnesota. The Vikings are one and done in the playoffs after a heartbreaking loss. They missed a chip shot, a 27-yard field goal with 26 seconds remaining in negative 25-degree weather. Awful. So Blair Walsh, he's going to shoulder a lot of the blame for this one, and you can sort of hear the pain in his voice after the game.
I can tell you this, it's my fault. I don't care whether you give me a watermelon hole. I should be able to put that through. And I know Jeff did his job and Kevin did his job. And I'm the only one who didn't do my job there. So that's on me.
All right, so it is on him, but other things happened in the game. But first, let's cover that. A lot of laces out talk. Mark.
Yeah, I mean, that was a subplot in the previous field goal that Blair Walsh had made. At one point, he had hit three, and they were up 9-0. And we were talking about Blair Walsh as the potential MVP of this game if it ended in a 9-3 type score, and he hit a 46-yarder, I believe it was, with the laces in facing him, and it was money in the bank. So, but, you know, it was interesting that Jeff Feely, former NFL kicker, said that Jay Feely, that is still a psychological impact when you see the laces facing you as a kicker. But forget all that. If you're a Vikings fan, here's what happened. All week long and all season long, you've been told that your team is just a fill-in wild card type entry that can't deal with the big boys, can't play with a team like Seattle, and was going to get bombed in their own stadium. And instead, they're a kick away, a chip shot away from doing what no one thought they could. And I have a very good friend who is a podcast listener, listens to every show, Eric Saez, goes to a ton of games in Minnesota. And, you know, when you have your friends texting you after these games, and it's just an empty, they're lost because this came out of nowhere, this
right
kind
there.
Of heartbreaking affair. And we've all felt them as fans. I feel for Minnesota's fan base. I don't know what else to say. I mean, what they did, they handled their business right up until the end. Very weird game. One of the weirdest games I've seen.
I thought that they were going to win this game. And then the Adrian Peterson fumble in the fourth quarter. I mean, everybody is going to point at Blair Walsh. But to me, that was one of the things that really killed them.
That was bigger.
I mean, that was huge. That set up the field goal that won it ultimately for Seattle.
Adrian Peterson has a history now of having big fumbles in the playoffs. He had three fumbles in the championship game against the Saints in 2009. I believe they recovered all those, but I don't care if you recover them. That's all just luck. If you fumble them, that's a problem. This was a huge play in this game. Cam Chancellor deserves the credit for wrenching the ball away from Peterson. I think the bigger problem was Peterson got the ball 23 times and they only ran for 45 yards. So the running game as a whole was not effective, and Norv Turner was so reliant on just sticking with it because they had a small lead in first down Peterson, second down Peterson, third and six, let's throw it. When Norv Turner was finally forced to actually throw the ball, put Jerick McKinnon in the game, play a different style on the last drive, they go right down the field and set up a potential game-winning field goal. So I think they were almost too conservative. Teddy Bridgewater played a pretty smart game, and I would have liked to see him get a few more chances to throw the ball.
The best running back of his generation, the highest-paid running back of his in the NFL, doesn't play in crunch time.
Right, they have Jerick McKinnon
Your most important player doesn't play in the most important part of the game. How valuable is that?
I think it says a lot. He led the league in fumbles. We're not saying Adrian Peterson's not a great running
back. No, he is the best running back of his generation.
And he's the best first and second down running back, I think, in the league. But, when it's not working, you got to maybe switch up what's happening. I know the weather, obviously, is a huge factor in limiting. But this is a Vikings team that's good at throwing the ball short, and they were pretty good at it today. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater averaged more yards per attempt than Russell Wilson did in this
game. He played well today. But when the game's on the line and you have to have McKinnon in there and not Adrian Peterson, that's a problem. Also, McKinnon had that huge drop. I mean, Teddy's stats would have looked even better. Stats look good, but they would have been even better if not for that drop.
He hit 11 different receivers. I still think, though, that the weather was a massive factor, and that was going to be one of our big posts at halftime because of the communication problems it caused for the Seahawks. You know, in the first half, five of the six timeouts for the both teams were called with 11 and a half minutes to go in the second quarter. I mean, it was chaos out there, and we saw Seattle never get on track. But really, it affected Minnesota, too. Whatever little passing game they seemed to have was that Seattle and Michael Bennett were just keyed up on that run in the entire way, and Adrian Peterson had nowhere to go. They were very patient. They just sat in their gaps, And wherever Adrian Peterson went, there was someone there to take him down. No big runs.
Bennett and Averill have been the best 4-3 defensive end tandem in the league all season, and they kind of dominated the line of scrimmage today. Neither of these defenses has anything to hang their heads about.
No.
But I agree that the elements were a huge factor in this game. I mean, that was the story of the game. The elements in the Seahawks offense was sleepwalking for 2.5 quarters until that botched snap, Russell Wilson, for the second playoffs in a row, turns a negative play. Bill Belichick once explained it, that he's got this Roger Staubach uncanny, uncoachable ability to make the right decisions when a play breaks down. And Daryl Bevel told us that at the Super Bowl last year. What separates Russell Wilson from all the other scrambling quarterbacks is the rate at which he makes great decisions. And to me, there's a creativity about his game that does come up. And, you know, I know, Greg, you said today the Seahawks are a really lucky team. They have a horseshoe up there, you know what. But no other quarterback in the NFL makes a hook slide to get that ball, gets up, and then throws that pass. I don't agree.
Russell Wilson looked like the Russell Wilson that played the Packers last year for most of this game. Mm-hmm. They really only had one productive offensive drive, and that was it. And the rest, they looked a little bit lost, I thought.
Right. I give the weather a lot of that, though. I really do.
I do, too, although a lot of it was timing. When he was late on, when he had those passes down the field that were short, a lot of them was he just threw the ball really late, and it wasn't all just arm strength. There was one where he chucked it 50 yards in the second half to lock it. It looked like a perfect Russell Wilson type of pass, but the timing wasn't there. Whatever it was, it's hard to play when it's 25 under wind chill. It was negative degrees at halftime. That is the third coldest game in NFL history, but it wasn't a good Russell Wilson play. All I meant was they got the missed kick. I mean, at that point, that has nothing to do with it.
They've had pixie dust trailing them for a couple of years. It's okay to say that, but you also have to say that no other quarterback makes that play.
Oh, absolutely. And their defense, for the most part, showed off their depth. I mean, they didn't give up a touchdown. Bennett was the wrecker. I mean, to me, he is the MVP of that defense this year. But Earl Thomas made a big play to end one drive. Cliff Averill, as you mentioned, made a big play. Bobby Wagner had a sack. Jeremy Lain broke up what looked like it could have been a long pass. Bruce Irvin had a second.
AJ Wright.
They're just so deep that they just take turns. And the Vikings only had, I think, 180 yards of offense. The Seahawks had about 30 or 40 more. Neither one was moving the ball up and down the field. But they had a great game. They were just waiting for their offense to finally wake up. And they did it in the fourth quarter for the second time in a row in an NFC game. And they were down 9-0 going into the fourth quarter.
And we can't forget about the Vikings defense and the pressure that they put on Russell Wilson, because it was in his face all day. Everson Griffin, he's had a really good year.
He was great today.
And he was so good today. He played a really good game.
I think Minnesota really wanted to say, you know, last time when they played Seattle and they were destroyed, half their defense and some of the most valuable players were not on the field. And I give them credit for, listen, Seattle, it had something to do with the weather, but it had a lot to do with Minnesota's defense as well today. They had a good game plan, and they took advantage of the elements, and that's fine.
It helped them. It slowed down the game.
It really did.
They're an explosive offensive team. I mean, they are the number one scoring team.
Slowed down the game to an extreme degree. I mean, the Seahawks weren't the same offense. They were sleepwalking. It looked like Frankenstein they were moving around that slow.
With that said, the Vikings, I keep saying it, they're the same team week after week, and that was basically the team you saw today, and the elements did help them out for that style of play. But I think that's why Mike Zimmer just looked heartbroken on the press conference podium after the game, because this was his type of game, and they did play great on defense, and he was about to stick it in everyone's face that they could take out that team like the Seahawks.
Yeah, Kristen Michael, too, he ran well today. So that was, I mean, if Marshawn Lynch, for some reason, if he's not back next week, then you can at least take solace in that.
It feels like the Vikings outplayed the Seahawks for 3.5 quarters at least.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
And the Vikings ended up with 183 yards. That's the way they play. They get outgained by 50 yards in a game that it feels like they outplayed the other team.
Yeah, I didn't think that. The Seahawks kept just having these 40-yard drives where they'd stall. They had the two fourth-down drives where they decided to go for it on fourth down instead of either kicking a long field goal or punting. They had a lot of drives that ended up with a whole lot of nothing, even when they had some promise going. I mean, it looked like two pretty even teams. But the Seahawks, I don't think, stole the game by any means.
I mean, Walsh hit a 47-yarder and a 43-yarder when Seattle decided that Steven Hauschka would not be ready to attempt a 46-yarder early in the game. I mean, Again, and it's like Sage Rosenfels, the former Vikings quarterback, tweeted that I know everyone on Twitter is going to want to like go burn Blair Walsh's house down, but I hate games like this that come down.
Please don't do that.
Well, it comes down to the last player who makes that last mistake when the game was mistake-ridden on offense by both teams, and he just said that Walsh is one of the most well-liked guys in the locker room.
Handsome, too.
And I grew up with Ernest Biner taking this from people when in these games, some of these players that end up being the GOAT, they wouldn't even be there at the end of the game if it weren't for Blair Walsh. I mean, he made some money kicks, and they put it on his shoulders. And the last thing that happened, that's the NFL. That stuff just happens.
All I could think, I thought that exact sort of thing when they're interviewing Cam Chancellor after the game. And I'm thinking, oh, that's an interesting person to ask. Because he was going to be the GOAT. He gave up a big-time penalty. That was the biggest play of what would have been the game-winning drive covering Kyle Rudolph. And then he gave up a big play to Kyle Rudolph, and that's what put them in field goal range. But he ends up being the guy that Michelle Tafoya talks to afterwards because he also was the guy that caused the fumble on Adrian Peterson. So all because of Blair Walsh's kick, it's like Chancellor's either a GOAT or a hero. And that was similar to a lot of plays that Chancellor's failed to make this year.
Well, and Blair Walsh's kick means that the Carolina Panthers – get to deal with the Seahawks in what will be a much different offense when it's not, you know, what is going to be, 47 degrees, 50
what
degrees?
A balmy. That's going to
be. Oh, yeah. Hey, Panthers fans, everyone who's getting in my timeline when I said that they have to be –
where is this going?
They have to be almost as disappointed as the Vikings fans when Walsh missed that kick. Pipe down with all the hero worship. They're like, no, that's who we wanted. We wanted the Seahawks coming in. We feel good. First of all, that's crazy. Why would you want to have a tougher matchup than playing a Packers team, for instance? With that's who would have been coming in. That's just stupid. You should want your team to have the best possible chance to play the Super Bowl. And then every other response was, did you see them today? They're not very good. Like, they barely beat the Vikings. This
oh,
game,
come on.
There's a word for this.
What?
Hubris.
It doesn't matter what happened. I think I probably am going to pick the Panthers to win that game. It's nothing about that. I think these are two of the best three or four teams in the league. But this game, it doesn't matter anymore. Next
not at
week.
All.
This game
no.
was played negative temperatures.
You scored 10 points on Planet Hoth. You're going to be fine when you come back to the nice south.
Right.
You're going to have
crazy.
Perfect temperatures.
And you're crazy to think that you would want the Seahawks. You got bad luck. You should be annoyed that the Cardinals, who are the 2 seed, have a much easier road to the Super Bowl than you do as the 1 seed. It's just how it falls sometimes, but that's what happened.
Burn the game tape. It doesn't mean anything. Because no. Pete Carroll said this after the game. It was really a survival game for both teams. I don't think it's a measure of anything
fans,
as far
yeah.
as your football, he said. Mm. I mean, that's – burn the game tape. It doesn't matter.
It was so cold there.
Burn it to keep warm. I mean,
let's get some. Is that what that's called? Yallerhorn? Is that how you pronounce it?
Oh, the gigantic horn.
Yes, it broke.
Greg wrote a story on it.
So cold. You did.
Yeah, I'm expecting the Pulitzer.
Did you use the word annoying as a modifier for the Yallerhorn?
All right. National Blog Association was all over that.
Move on to our next game.
By the way, sorry, Vikings fans, as we're moving on.
I know.
You had a great season. I think they have the foundation there. Before we move on, I do want to say, I think they have the foundation there to
they
be
do.
A really good team moving forward. I know I just said that you can't always believe you're going to be back, but they do have a lot of young players. Eric Kendrick, Teddy Bridgewater, like really throughout the roster, they're really built to last.
They've drafted well the last 3 years. There's no reason to think they can't have another good draft and keep building.
Great
and they
coach.
Should be moving on. I mean, one missed field goal, you shouldn't be that upset. I mean, yes, you should be that upset because you're not in the playoffs, but your team is in good shape.
I think I give them like 3 or 4 months of like drunken devastation where really their lives are off track, and then they can get it together from there.
Right.
Around the draft time.
Once it gets over freezing again.
I mean, they'll be talking about this game for 20 years. It's Gary Anderson-like on one level. The stakes are not as high, but this is one of those games that will be that replay. If you're Blair Walsh and Blair Walsh's children and his grandchildren, you're going to be dealing with this TV clip for a long time.
Vikings fans are scary on Twitter. That's all I'm going to say. They're, you know who else, though, is? Bengals fans.
Mm. Bengals fans are scary in real life.
They are. Let's move on to that game. Let's go to Cincinnati in the 5th annual West Divis. All right, Wes, this game, we've been waiting for it all year, and it came, and it was a rousing success again. So let's talk about it. A wild, rainy game in Cincinnati between the Steelers and the Bengals, a game that featured an incredible catch, some vicious hits, critical turnovers, some questionable calls and non-calls, and emotional meltdowns by players and coaches as well. All right, Wes, this was a West of Us to remember.
This was the West of Us to end all West of Us.
It has to be, right?
I mean, you could not script a more fascinating ending, unless it was that if Vontaze Burfict wasn't touched down and he really did just run out the end zone and get penalized, that would have been the best way to end it.
But, he ran, like, all the way to the locker room.
But this was a pretty good ending. Just the total and comprehensive meltdown of discipline from two players who have been known to have meltdowns of disciplines in the past, and Vontaze Burfict, who plays out of control, frankly, and I think has been for a couple of years the dirtiest player in the NFL. Mm. Playing against a team that is known to hit you and will play a little dirty themselves, Vontaze Burfict went over the line, I think.
Yeah, Greg, you texted us last night and said, this game has everything, and it seriously did. I mean, you could not make any of this up. This had everything, and you look at – I mean, it almost felt like there were multiple games within the game because there were just so many different storylines and so many things that changed. But Vontaze Burfict in this game and the amount of roles that he played in this drama was unbelievable.
Right. Yeah. He injures Ben Roethlisberger. We're reporting, Mike Silver, is that it was a separated shoulder that Ben Roethlisberger wound up playing through at the end. We'll get to that. Burfict played a really good game for the most part, but that hit – was insane, not because it hit, you know, Brown in the head and that was a cheap shot. Who knows? He did go pretty low. Everyone is convinced that no matter what, he's definitely going for Antonio Brown's head. I don't know that. But the ball is clearly past Brown, and there's only 18 seconds left, and the ball's at the 47-yard line, and the Steelers don't have any timeouts at that point. So if that penalty doesn't happen, the Steelers have a really, really hard time winning that game. And for him – it just seemed like it was such an obvious penalty that was going to be called 20 times out of 20. For him to make that decision in the heat of the moment at that moment, and that ends up leading to the Adam Jones penalty, is absolutely insane. It has to be one of the most, if not the most, costly penalty in playoff history. I mean, can anyone come up with another penalty in that sort of moment that's just a mental meltdown that immediately costs your team a season, that the season is over, not to mention a team that hasn't won a playoff game in 26 years.
Not only that, but I cannot believe the benefit of the doubt he's gotten from some people. When you watch Vontaze Burfict week in and week out, he is going to twist knees, twist cleats, elbow you in the head. He is going to do stuff in the pile and after the play to hurt you. And it's totally in character for him to lower the boom on a defenseless receiver.
I mean, and that wasn't the only thing that happened in this game. You have, first of all, Mike Mularkey pulling Reggie Nelson.
What was that?
Mike Munchak. Yes.
Mike Munchak. Mike Mularkey. Mike Munchak. I mean, that was unbelievable, the way that he did that. And then he acted like, oh, he was all innocent. Like, whoa, 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 what's going on here?
Well, talk about a guy that's suddenly on television for the wrong reason. And then he knew in his mind that for the next 2 minutes, the cutbacks – the broadcast angles are going to be looking at him, and he's kind of hemming and hawing on the sideline and, like, trying to get an assistant coach to be like, yeah, that was no big deal, right? And no one would give him any credit.
You have Joey Porter in the middle of the field, in the middle of a Bengals huddle as well.
Well, that's the thing, and we're going to play Adam Jones's rant on Instagram in just a minute, but Adam Jones was really fired up at that moment because Joey Porter is out there instigating, and – Adam Jones deserves no credit and no leniency for that moment of losing his mind, too, and winding up pushing the official. One thing has nothing to do with the other. But you still can point out the fact that Porter is acting like a clown by being out there. I don't care.
That's his move. He's going to use it.
Right. I don't care if a player is injured on the field. I don't care what he's doing exactly. This is the same man who literally was doing a crab walk celebration dance in Cincinnati.
Which was awesome.
Which was awesome after a penalty flag was thrown already for celebrating. That was what happened last time the Steelers were there. So Porter is an idiot, and he's lucky that he wasn't penalized.
He should have been penalized. He shouldn't have been on the field. Those penalties should have offset.
Sometimes it happens that whatever happens with the officials changes the narrative. But imagine, if you will, that the officials just call the penalty on Porter right away, and that it ends up being offsetting between Burfict and Porter, and you back it up to the 47 again.
Everything different.
All we're talking about today is how Joey Porter cost the Steelers a playoff game, and it would have been totally justified, but it didn't happen, and that's why Adam Jones was so fired up after the game.
Ref did a horrible job. You got Jerry Porter in the middle of the field talking to everybody, then when somebody say something to him, he don't even supposed to be on the field.
All right, I'm good now. I've had my 10 minutes. but I still don't believe I should have got a flag for talking to a coach that's on the field behind the huddle. That's my opinion.
Well, I mean, it's frustrating because he's...
Those were two separate Instagram posts, by the way. Yeah. The first one was deleted, and then the second one cooled down.
I mean, as Greg just said so eloquently, I mean, he committed his own infraction, which Bengals fans will feel is ridiculous. But Joey Porter has been a nuisance for a decade plus, and I thought that when his playing days ended, we would be... if you watch a lot of AFC North games, that guy has been a pain in the butt for every team that plays him for a long time. A, because he was a great player, but now he's just annoying. And it's how many pregame fights were there with Joey Porter back in the days?
He's got that in.
Right? I mean, this is one guy that you would have two Steelers coaches that were flagged in this playoff game had that happened. That would have been unprecedented.
Bengals fans were whipped into a ridiculous frenzy all week by talk radio and the newspaper's coverage, the TV coverage in that city. I saw it on Facebook because all of my friends and family are there. They are convinced that the Steelers are the dirtiest team and they run the cleanest program, and they are so smart and play great football. You paid for a couple of idiots. I haven't been nuanced enough about Vontaze Burfict. I've been watching this team for 40 years, and the Steelers come in and kick their butts every time because they have backbone and tough players. And Vontaze Burfict is that for the Bengals. He's their Mean Joe Green. He's their James Harrison, who's willing to get physical and dirty. If they had a few more Vontaze Burfict, they'd probably win this game.
You're going to get the other side of it, though, too, and that cost them last night.
Yeah.
Well, you're right. They didn't back down. I mean, this was not the Steelers coming in and playing bully as they normally do, not on any level.
Well, it was for three quarters. I mean, the Steelers are up 15-0. We think this is an absolute snooze fest right until the moment, really, that Burfict sacks Ben Roethlisberger around at the 2-yard line. It's still 15-0 at that point, by the way. That did start changing the tenor of the game. The Bengals come all the way back with a great fourth quarter. Everyone deserves credit in that comeback, A.J. McCarron included. And then they get the ball back after picking off Landry Jones. And Jeremy Hill, all they have to do right there, as costly as the penalties were by Burfict, the Hill fumble really is the more, not unforgivable, but I think it's the costlier.
They didn't need yards there. They just needed to run the clock, and he was going for yards.
And well, they didn't have Gio Bernard because he was concussed earlier.
Well, he had to do was not fumble. I don't mind them going for yards. He got 6 yards on the play, 4 more yards, and the game is literally over. I mean, they're going to be able to burn the timeouts. He got 6 yards. That's a first down run. They get 10 yards in the next two plays. The game's over. But you can't fumble it. No matter what you do, you can't fumble it. And Ryan Shazier had an awesome game, and that was the best and biggest play of that game. I mean, he should be the hero.
His hit on Gio, I thought that's like sort of when the wheels fell off and all the emotions really started to just like bubble
it
over.
Really got out of control, and it is interesting that in the following 24 hours there were reports that maybe the Bengals would decide to remove Marvin Lewis and elevate Hugh Jackson. And one of the issues with Marvin Lewis was players in the locker room afterwards saying that there's not anyone taking control of this group of players, especially on defense, and that it's not an issue just in this game, but it's been an issue ongoing for a while.
Yeah, and the perfect hit on Ben Roethlisberger specifically, we saw Bengals fans throwing all sorts of stuff at him and booing. But when you talk about the way that the offense performed without him and with Landry Jones in there, it was like the Bengals defense, there was blood in the water and they knew that they could come back. And this was their home. And if they don't have, the Steelers don't have Ben Roethlisberger going forward, that's a major, major problem.
Or
Antonio Brown as well. Yeah. Yeah.
The Bengals might wind up taking out the Steelers. It just might be a week later. I mean, it really is. I still can't say enough, though, about Shazier. I mean, he is something else. There are not many linebackers
that I've ever seen
like him in terms
Nobody.
Of,
I mean, who moves like him?
That's what I'm saying. No. The speed is just insane, and everyone was killing me on Twitter again for –
a lot of anti-Greg stuff happening on Twitter, it sounds like. Or you have a complex about it.
A little bit of both. Because I thought the Shazier hit on Bernard was clean, and there was a lot of question about whether he launched or not, whether that should have been a penalty. There were some ex-officials that got on Twitter and said that should have been a penalty. Then again, Pereira said the exact opposite. So there was a disagreement whether that hit was dirty. But I think it was part of a game that he was just vicious. Whatever you want to call it, he was vicious in that game, and it was a big reason why they won.
I want to say one quick thing, because I know the Bengals fans in the stadium, and to some degree there were a lot of clowns in there, obviously. But I actually had more of a Westivus evening, I think, than Wes, because Wes was at home strapped to a laptop having to report this game for some reason. And I was actually at a very intriguing dive bar not far from our office that somehow was filled with
– Oh, look at this.
Yeah, that's last year's
that's
Westivus.
That's last year.
That's last year.
My friends Philadelphia and Liz Lowe's a good friend.
If you're watching on YouTube, and you can check it out on our YouTube playlist, if you want to see Wes – with the eyes of a man that's been enjoying Westivus. Please check it out.
I missed that hat, my old train wreck's hat.
This year's photo would have been Wes in like a darkened room with the light of a laptop on his face. But, I mean, I was
so
with
a – carried on the tradition.
I tried to the best I could. I was in a dive bar filled with probably 15 to 20 Bengals fans, and now we're bringing this completely tone-deaf music back to one of the most violent NFL games I've ever seen in my life. That's fine. But I will, like, these guys, I felt for them. I completely felt for these fans, and the music rages on. I'm not sure why. But they were defeated from the first minute the game showed any sense of going wrong. And it felt to me like sitting with Browns fans, honestly, because you just expect the worst to happen. And at one point I had to move away and go to another edge of the room and just watch the game on my own. But as it began to crumble and when it finally took its final turn, I looked back and just the sadness in that side of the bar, it was unbelievable.
Well, imagine if you're if you're a Bengals fan, you've probably turned off this podcast like the minute we went into this Westivus intro because we're just having so much glee at a team's misfortune. I mean, this is the same podcast. Like, we're afraid. Like, if the Browns lose or the Jets lose, like, we're afraid to even mention it. Like, we can't. Like, we were going to do
it. Oh, well, we've mentioned it plenty of times.
You know what I mean, though? Yeah. We're sensitive to a fan right after the game, especially after a big loss, that they're feeling it. Like,
well, and yeah, they thought that they were going to win that game. I thought it. Everybody thought
this is another level of losing. The stat that they've never come from behind to win any playoff game. Any deficit. So that means they've never even from behind to be down 3-0 in the first quarter and win the game. And so that shows that there's no thing that they can look back on than their team had fight. And yet this is a game they were down 15-0 in the fourth quarter with their backup quarterback, A.J. McCarron. And for this to be the win where they finally get the Schneid off for 26 years. I mean, it was going to be an incredible moment. It was going to be one of the best Bengals moments ever. And then for it to end this way is so devastating.
Westivus
looked
on.
Our poor friend Michael Berger, who's been on this show, looked like a shell of himself today in the office. He was so sad.
It made me think differently a little bit. The Bengals are Charlie Brown, and football is Lucy pulling the ball away. I mean, that's the playoffs. Mm. And I know there's a disconnect. You guys always wonder, how can I enjoy the misery of my family and friends? Well, look, here's the thing. I don't have to prove my fandom. I wrote a love letter to the Bengals organization with Ohio River offense in the offseason. I have fond memories, but I knew, like, in the 90s, I had to get out. I had to get out. You know, the Bengals went and we broke up. They broke my heart. They went and they got collagen lips and fake boobs, and everybody falls for them.
I hate when that happens.
Everybody falls for them, but they're not that pretty, and I don't trust them. And I have, to me, they're a source of endless amusement, not a source of hope. And I understand if other Bengals see them as a source of hope. I think they're hilarious, and I find the whole Westivus thing endlessly amusing. I just love every minute of it. I was downright giddy. And if you guys want to keep seeing the Bengals as a source of hope, that's on you.
Well, if you don't laugh, you cry. So I
get it. Greg's shaking his head.
Well, I'm thinking back to your tone-deaf music comment.
I think we're getting trolled by the producers group, and I love it.
Well, all right.
I would just like to say one last thing about Wes.
And then we must move on.
I
was just celebrating the holiday, all right?
Thank you, Brandon.
Fair enough.
I appreciate it because it's an international holiday now. I got tweets before the game from people in Brazil, Ireland, New Zealand, Norway, Sweden. Everybody's got their drinks out. What do I do to celebrate? What should I cook? How do I celebrate Westivus? And after the game, I must have gotten 1,000 tweets. It was – our listeners are the best. I love you guys.
They are awesome.
I appreciate how much you all enjoy my enjoyment.
And you guys are really nice too, by the way. All right, let's move on to our final game, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Houston Texans. Whoa, wild card weekend kicked off with a crazy 106-yard kickoff return for a touchdown by Nile Davis. Brian Hoyer followed that up with a disastrous day, committing 4 turnovers on his first 6 possessions. The Texans' tailspin continued from there, ending in a 30-point shutout at home. So the Kansas City Chiefs have now won 11 straight, but with Jeremy Maclin day-to-day dealing with a high ankle sprain, that's a major blow to the KC offense. Mark.
Well, I just want to talk about one thing, and it's the fact that the Texans, which I do think have been a well-coached team under Bill O'Brien and have done a lot with a little, so there's your credit. But well, no, because that's the case. But there, when we talk about what the playoffs need and how to fix the playoffs in some areas, you know, we got some bad games this weekend, and this was one of the worst playoff games. I've been watching football since 1984, and this is one of the worst and least competitive playoff games and least dramatic football events I've ever seen with my eyes. And I would never want to watch this again in the playoffs. It was, and Greg, you mentioned it was the third highest rated Saturday playoff game.
Saturday afternoon playoff game. I was shocked by that.
And I just see that as the fact that the audience continues to grow. It is not because there was even a compelling element to this game. And it starts and ends with Brian Hoyer, who, look at, Brian Hoyer is a nice person by all accounts. It's not a personal thing. But your job as a quarterback in a game like this, when you have this kind of an offense, if you're not going to take command and you can't do that, and you're not going to target DeAndre Hopkins enough, you've got to manage this thing and not make mistakes. And from the first pass, he looked completely lost at sea to me. The interceptions were not tips. They were not deflections. They were not someone else's fault. They were his fault. They were terrible throws. And, you know, I wrote a column basically saying that the Texans will never change this Bill O'Brien team until they start finding something other than Flotsam to be their quarterback. This group of hobby horses, Flotsam and Jetsam, this group of hobby horses that they wheel out
hobby
every
horses.
Season is ridiculous. And these are just a group of backup quarterbacks thrust into this position. And people were tweeting saying it's not fair.
I thought Brandon Whedon was going to get in there.
But that's the point. The fact that a stadium full of people were cheering for Brandon Whedon to come save the day is a problem. And people were saying, oh, well, you're not giving enough credit or enough blame to the Texans' defense and other – what are you talking about? The Texans' defense actually did a good job what they were handed. So you can't have a quarterback do this. The game was a disaster. It was not fun to watch. It could not have ended quickly enough, and I'm glad it ended.
Why did you hate this game so much?
Well, number one, I was like
venom.
No, because
you've been going for 7 minutes.
I hadn't been on the desk for a long time, and I knew this was the final part of the day. And I couldn't. I just wanted it to be fun, if anything, or be a blowout. It was a blowout. And the Texans proved they were not up for the billing on any level. They did not deserve to be in the playoffs. I feel bad for Jets fans.
I am ashamed that I picked the Texans to win, and I think that
you're not alone.
The preview I wrote for this game might be the worst article I've ever written. That I spent so much time trying to find a reason for the Texans to be competitive, and they, like you said, Brian Hoyer. Look, he might be a nice guy, but. And it's hard to judge these things from home, but you look at him, and from the opening whistle, he appears to be jittery. He's got nerves early on.
There's no doubt. He missed his first couple throws. They weren't interceptions, but he missed them by a mile, and they were wide
open. They give him an easy completion to get him going, which is good coaching, and then he can't ever regain his confidence from there.
Well, this is a bad team, and you said this is one of the worst playoff games that you've seen. This has to be one of the worst teams to have made the playoffs, the Texans. Because they were under 500 by a couple games outside of one of the worst divisions I've ever seen, this year's AFC South. Mm. I mean, that is a terrible division. I believe this is a team that crumbles in a lot of situations when they start falling behind. I know this was earlier in the season, but they get blasted by the Falcons. They get blasted by the Dolphins. They get blasted by the Patriots. This is a team that in many games this season weren't particularly competitive. Now, on the other hand, if you're the other 52 guys, there's not a lot you can do about this kind of Brian Hoyer showing up. You know what I mean?
You can't.
I mean, he just was so bad. It was the worst game of his career, I'm sure. It was certainly the worst game of his season. He's been solid this season.
He played bad, but I mean, how much of that was the Chiefs defense as well? Now, I know like he is no good, but how much was that exacerbated by the Chiefs defense? The Chiefs, we've gone all this time talking about the Texans. The Chiefs at this point have won 11 straight, and that defense looks insanely good.
I think they're right there with the best defenses in the league, and they did exactly what you would want them to do against a team with very little talent. they dominated. I mean, they're good at every level. Justin Houston, supposed to be their best player, and he doesn't even seem right.
He doesn't.
Coming off a knee injury. And yet you've got Dontari Poe, you've got Derek Johnson, you've got Marcus Peters, Sean Smith.
Alan Bailey had a really good game.
Alan Bailey had a good game. You know, Jay Howard.
Your boy, Jay Howard. Contract year.
It's a great defense, and they're going up against a Patriots team who struggled on offense. And, I mean, I think they're as good as any defense in the NFL.
That's going to be an interesting game.
I really do.
I agree.
So, I mean, they did everything they needed to do.
They swarmed to the ball like no other defense in the playoffs. They swarmed to the ball.
Bob Sutton, I mean, if Bob Sutton was 20 years younger and he had half the mouth that the people he used to work for, Rex Ryan and Mike Pettine, did, people would be talking about him as some great coach. I mean, he's the best coach right now from that crew. Right?
Absolutely.
Maybe he's not the best coach, but he's
– Well, he's the only one that made that defense. He's not running that defense exactly, but
no.
To make, you know, the core of that defense work this season, and the people that taught it to him, complete junk.
He's having the best season. And this is a team with a long, long playoff drought too. So their fans should enjoy the hell out of this.
And the Chiefs, to me, I mean, they should have been up way more than 13-0 at the half. They wasted some really good field position. They only had, what, like 4 points off of – 6 points off of 4 turnovers. I mean, there's really no excuse for that. They obviously came out and it was a blowout, but it should have been even more of a blowout.
They did an excellent job by how they dealt with J.J. Watt, I thought, too, where there were even plays where he wasn't even blocked, and they let him pursue and be aggressive the way he is, and they'd have – a zone run to the complete opposite direction. They just kind of they baited him. And I'm not saying he fell for it. He didn't at all. But, what can you do? He's going to pursue and chase. And other teams have not been able to do that. The Chiefs are very well coached on offense. They're just not extremely talented on offense.
Yeah.
But they got the job done.
But they have one of the most talented tight ends or receivers in the league in Travis Kelce, 128 yards on a day where they only had 190 yards receiving.
Wow.
Which is amazing. I mean,
it was his first 100-yard game since the last time they played the Texans.
But just watching him, the way he plays, Alex Smith. You know, you saw what you don't like about the Chiefs' offense in the first half, but a lot of third down throws short of the sticks, where then they ended up punting. But you didn't see any big mistakes except the early interception from Smith. And then the second half, they kind of did what they do. They got a couple long touchdown drives, and it was basically the same Chiefs game that we see every week: 2 or 3 long, nice drives. And then you just avoid some mistakes, let the defense do the rest, and it's worked for 11 straight weeks.
And I love what I've seen from Spencer Ware the last couple of months. He's running really well. He's a prototypical power back and clock killer at the end. But this offense, Jeremy Maclin's injury, he's one of the most valuable number one receivers in the NFL just because of what's behind him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Albert Wilson is your number two. A rookie, Chris Connolly, who's playing a little bit better lately, is your number three. Those guys have to come up and be your starters. I would be shocked if Maclin plays on a high ankle sprain.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge loss for them, and it was so sad to see that. I mean, it was almost like he knew at that point that he was done just based on his expression. But that's no good for them, because if they're taking on the Patriots, they have Patrick Chung, who's been
well,
really
they have Tom Brady who has a high ankle sprain too.
Exactly. But if you're talking about Travis Kelce coming in and – replacing his production or trying to, Patrick Chung is going to – I mean, he's been able to shut down tight ends really well all year.
Yeah, you got Chung, you have McCourty, and you got Belichick, who tries to stop the star on the other team, and that's definitely Kelce. I think even more than the running game, I think they'll take their chances that their run defense, which has been pretty good, can hold up against Kansas City, and they'll give Kelce as much attention as the Chiefs give Gronkowski. But that's for next week. Do we think this Texans team – but I feel like of all the teams that lost in the playoffs, they're kind of the most hopeless, like where they don't really feel particularly good.
Well, you don't have a quarterback. You're very much like a bunch of teams that didn't make the playoffs.
They had 2 of the 10 best players in the NFL this year. But like you said, they seem hopeless because without a quarterback, you're nothing.
J.J. Watt can take over that.
Not from what
that
we
ridiculous
saw
trick play.
We didn't even talk about that. I mean, I think Bill O'Brien should take some of the blame for this game too. But overall, I think they have hope at the coaching position. They've got a good coach.
The one thing I thought people really killed Bill O'Brien for, that J.J. Watt play. And to me, I was like, have you watched Brian Hoyer play?
That's a better option.
But not joking around. That's when you break out some crazy stuff.
Yeah.
What they've been doing.
Is when you have no confidence in your quarterback. And he had no confidence at that point, and he shouldn't have. So
Hoyer.
It didn't bother me. It just didn't work.
Well, I thought it was a little cute. I don't think it was in a big spot where they absolutely needed a touchdown. It would have given Brian Hoyer some confidence. Instead, it was a botched effort. But the next play, Hoyer comes out and throws a pick.
Right.
John McClain of the Houston Chronicle had the line of the day. It was something like Watt following Wilfork in the same play. The only place Watt follows Wilfork is in the Killens barbecue.
Oh no. Yeah, there was a lot of American Hoyer story out there. Yeah. So that was a good one.
I feel bad for like when this happens to a person like that, or if you're Blair Walsh, what do you do that
night?
You
grow from it.
I guess you
hurt.
I
mean, hurt for a long time. It leaves a terrible scar that will never leave, and then you grow from it.
Well, you're also a millionaire, so you like book a flight to like an island where you don't read Twitter for 3 weeks.
So if they were women, they would be eligible for you to date them because
they'd be slightly flawed. But
date women with scars.
But that's how you approach this. Is this person going to quit and give up and become broken beyond repair, or are they going to stay slightly flawed and grow from the experience?
Well, Greg, that's actually a great point. You had a date on Friday.
With the
you?
Mushroom cutter.
How did that go?
It was peculiar, but it went really well.
Well, it went really well.
It was a
really
peculiar
that's what I heard.
Experience, but it ended up being fun. Yeah.
That's right. What I would want to hear if I was her and listening to this podcast. It was peculiar.
Well, look, she ought to know.
Now she knows. Mushroom cutter. All right. Well, this has been quite a day, everybody. I think Dan is going to be back, hopefully, soon. Dan, please get back here.
Flying back right now, I think.
Unless, he is.
Unless he gets signed to play shortstop in the Winter League. He may stay there for winter ball, come back in March.
Has anybody heard from him?
Three days ago, vaguely.
There he is.
Yeah, I think he's should be back in a couple hours and save travels to Dan.
There's been a precedent sent that when one of us is on vacation in a tropical locale, you're not to text them.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully he is recharged, refreshed, and ready to go and ready to host this podcast when he gets back. Guys, this has been great. This has been real. What an awesome weekend of football it's been.
Great job by Colleen, let's be honest.
Great.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Colleen.
Well done, Colleen.
Thanks for having me. It's been fun. It's been real. I'm just trying not to mess up. So let's get the show on the road. Everybody, have a great week. Oh, look, there's the awkward ISO cam. Awesome. That's back again. Great. So that is it for this edition of the Around the NFL podcast. For everybody, we'll see you later.
Freaks and geeks, what is up? Why don't you check out the NFL Fantasy Live podcast?
Yeah, NFL Fantasy Live podcast is Tuesdays and Fridays. You can find it on iTunes, on NFL.com. We always give you the top waiver wire pickups, starts and sits, everything you need
matchups,
to win a championship. Everything. A lot
podcast.
Of Star Wars stuff. Yeah.
You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll wear a tie and eat yogurt. It's great.
Listen.
All right, the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, MG, Marcus Grant, Michael Fabiano, and me, James Coe, every Tuesday and Friday on the NFL Fantasy Live podcast.